Blog Talk Radio.
The agenda topics for this evening are: what is capitalism? Our guests participating will, of course, be Ralph Poynter, Joe Myers, Dick Minerly, and Larry Pinkney, and, as ever, Lynn Stewart. Our second agenda topic is the Charleston Massacre. Everything is connected, including the recent NAACP incident in which a young woman tried to pass for black. In so doing, she is fulfilling the worst false fear, the worst false fear of white supremacy, i.e. that being black is a benefit and that black people are taking over everything, which in turn is connected to capitalism and the materialistic dreams of acquisition. At this time, I see many of our guests are tuned in. We will be recognizing you all. We will be opening your mics. But first, I'd like to introduce Ralph Poynter. As many of you know, Ralph Poynter is a stalwart warrior for community control, for self-defense and self-determination, for the rights of all people to be free. And he is an advocate for all political prisoners everywhere. So without further ado, I would like to pass on to you, to the mic, Mr. Ralph Poynter.
And thank you so much, Betty Davis. I am here to talk about what we have discussed in the past weeks, and there are so many topics, there are so many issues that we have to deal with. And as we have said, they are all connected. And what we try to do on this program is to show people the connections. And so without further ado, I will delay the reading of my credo, which is it's extremely important, which I have received so much conversation about during the week. And, why delay it? I'm going to go right into it. This is what I believe. The overriding element in every situation or circumstance in a black life is racism. Birth, elementary school, housing, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm not going to, you all have it. I'm not going
to. Conversation about joining the week. And I, well, why delay? I'm going to go right into it. This is what I believe.
What is this?
The overriding element in every situation or circumstance in a black life is racism. Elementary school, housing, etc., etc. And I'm not going to, you all have it.
Hey, it's you having a problem here. Hello, hello. There's a problem here. You guys are beating Ralph over and over and over again. Got to start it over somehow. Go back.
Turn it off for a minute, see if we can get back on it. Hello?
Hi.
I'm on.
Technical difficulties. Are you on, Ralph?
I heard him. This is Dick. I heard him.
I'm
now
on.
I don't hear.
And Lynn,
right, now
I'm on.
On. All righty. Let us continue. We have, I've received much mail or many phone calls during the week about.
Can
my
you
credo.
Turn yours up, Ralph? You're sounding like you're at the end of a tunnel.
Okay, how does this sound?
Much better.
Hello?
Hi, we're all trying to listen.
How does this sound?
Much better, Ralph.
Hello?
Further away.
I can't. How does this sound now?
Are you speaking with a speakerphone? Don't do it.
No, I'm not right into the phone. I can't help it. Let me try another phone. I will call in on the other phone. Anyway, it is what is capitalism? And I was reading my credo, but I'm going to skip over that. And let's get, you know, right to the issue, because so many people have had so much to say about what I have said is my credo. And so I'm going to give people to an opportunity to jump right in on where we are, discuss the credo, or discuss other issues you have in mind. And so, since Lynn, you called in, I'd like to start off with Larry Pinkney to give us a report on Reverend. He is a very important political prisoner because he represents problems and one of the solutions at the same time. And he's a problem because he is in jail, and he's the solution because he has the answer, which I feel, and a lot of people do not feel, is that we can boycott and we can. All of this is in our power. We don't have to ask anybody else how to do it. And Reverend Pinkney has done that, is why he's in jail. So, then, Larry, would you pick up there and tell us about.
Yes, I definitely will. Thank you, Brother Ralph. Thank you, Sister Betty Davis. Thank you, Sister Lynn Stewart. Thank all of you and the audience as well. This is Larry Pinkney speaking, and as I do every week, I'm calling in to essentially give an update on the situation with respect to Reverend Edward Pinkney, who still remains in prison. Incarcerated. He was wrongly and unjustly put in prison to begin with no evidence of so-called voter fraud. And I say so-called because that's exactly what it was, so-called. There was no voter fraud. But the reality is that he is still fighting the authorities. I did speak with Reverend Pinkney day before yesterday, this past Sunday. He wants folks to send out emails to each other And when I say to each other, to our friends, to our associates, to our colleagues, and let them know, let everyone know, that specifically he is now engaged in an appeal bond process. In other words, his appeal bond, in order to be released on appeal bond, should be filed by no later, we are expecting no later than the end of this month, that is to say no later than July 30th. And obviously, it is imperative that everyone know about this, and so I'm simply conveying what Reverend Pinckney asked me to convey to everyone, to please make sure that your friends, your colleagues, your comrades, etc., are all very cognizant of the fact that Reverend Pinckney is seeking an appeal bond in order to be released from prison on that appeal bond. The other thing I want to comment on, and I'll do it very succinctly, and that is South Carolina, the massacre there. And I just want to have something very quick to say, and that is, this is nothing new. I repeat, this is nothing new. Conditions continue to get worse and worse, and too many of us sit back and allow them to get worse and worse because we've got Mr. Drone Man Barack Obama in the White House, and the other Democrats and Republican sellouts who are selling us people, black, white, brown, red, and yellow people across the board, both in this nation and, quite frankly, throughout the earth, throughout Mother Earth. Now, if you think that this is new, I want to call something to your attention. When I say this is new, that is to say the massacre in South Carolina. I want to call everyone's attention to Tulsa, Oklahoma, 1921. And if you doubt what I'm saying, where many, many blacks, in fact, the entire township, black township of Tulsa, was utterly destroyed the first time that aerial bombing, that the United States used aerial bombing, bombing from the air, was on black community in Tulsa, Oklahoma. You doubt me? Then this is what I want you to do. Get the March 18, 2002 edition of The Nation magazine, front cover, Tulsa's Shame. And it goes into detail as to what happened in Tulsa, Oklahoma, 1921. Bloody, unjust, and incredible. So it's up to us to engage in just common sense, and common sense is self-defense. Even Brother Malcolm X said that repeatedly, that a person would have to be a fool not to believe in the right to self-defense, armed or otherwise. Self-defense. We must have that. Not to mention the fact that the Second Amendment of the U.S. Constitution refers to the right to bear arms, but this is deeper than that. This is the right to defend ourselves, period. Black, white, brown, red, and yellow people, and poor people in particular, have that right, but we're going to lose it if we don't use it, okay? So that's where I want to end what I have to say. On behalf of Reverend Edward Pinckney, I convey his greetings and his regards to everyone. He remains strong. He remains determined. He hopes that you also are remaining strong and determined. I'm going to end it right there. Thank you again, my dear brother Ralph. Thank you, Sister Betty Davis. Thank you, our beloved sister Lynn Stewart. All power to the people. Thank you, brother.
Okay, thank you so much, Larry. And we're going to give Lynn Stewart an opportunity to come in on that. Lynn?
Well, as you know, I couldn't be happier than to follow Larry Pinckney and his admonition to us all to think about self-defense. Because I tell you, when I first heard about what had happened in that church in South Carolina, I, at first, for about at least 12-hour period, I was just in shock. when I started listening to what I knew was the managed news, I tried to listen very carefully to hear any words of resistance, of defiance, of struggle, of determination against what was a white supremacist act. Because that's exactly what it was, and whether it's carried out by a 21-year-old man-child or whether it's carried out by these old gaffers in Mississippi, it is still the white supremacy movement, and black people must become cognizant. We know that the press completely played down motive here, except to show this young man with his Confederate flag. But I think in a church where Denmark Vesey founded and which was burnt to the ground because he mounted a revolt against the white slave owners in 1822. This was in the height of the slave trade.
The one you sent me on.
And yet he was able to do this, and this was his church, and yet Denmark Vesey was buried at the end of a New York Times article, not even mentioned except that he had had a shrine in the church and that he was executed for what was obviously, if you read any of that history, one of the most brilliantly thought out and
planned
of his day. I want to go on to say, I listened this morning to Mississippi Goddamn, and I just feel like the word should be changed to South Carolina Goddamn, because once we understand the motive behind this and realize that power must be met with power. It can't be all this namby-pambying forgiving. You can't forgive someone for white supremacy. You can't be forgiven. It is something that is endemic, and I urge everyone to read Mumia Abu-Jamal this week, who wrote on Charleston and said that white supremacy is the mother's milk of Charleston and indeed the entire South. I would say to everyone, please, look at Mumia's article. It was, of course, broadcast on Prison Radio, but it is on the Prison Radio website at Gmail. And I would end by saying that although all this young man had in his world was his whiteness and his 44 automatic, I have to end by saying the flag that he wore on his shirt of Rhodesia, of South Africa, his belief in white supremacy, was shown to be defeated by armed struggle, both in Rhodesia and in South Africa, and I might add, in the Confederate States of America, although that was resurrected very shortly thereafter. But armed struggle defeated white supremacy in Rhodesia and in South Africa. And I think we have to remember that when we listen to Ralph Credo, which I, for one, wish he would have read the entirety again. But at any rate, it is the crunch here. And I think until it is recognized that we must be defiant, we must be resistant, we must have a slogan that represents us, not this, I'll never see my mother again, but I forgive him. You cannot forgive his motives. It cannot be forgiven because it is the problem and it must be dealt with. And I just would end by saying, please concentrate on the fact that this young man reloaded his automatic 5 times during this massacre, and not one of these good Christians could stand up and against him and save the others. That's also part of the Bible. No one has more love than to lay down his life for his brother, and that's part of self-defense too. Defense of another. And that never happened in that church, and that is something that we all should hang our heads about and not forgive white supremacists. Thanks, Ralph.
Thank you, Lynn.
All right, folks, we want to thank you, and we want to ask those of you who have a radio in the background to temporarily mute your phone until we call you. At this point, Mr. Poynter is going to read his credo, and then I understand Jericho is in the house and the Mamiya Coalition is in the house. So we will call on Jericho, and we will call on the Mamiya Coalition right after Mr. Pointer's credo. Thank you.
Yes, I will read it again, and this is the credo. The overriding element, every situation or circumstance in a black life is racism. Birth, elementary school, housing, health, food, etc. Black lives never mattered except during slavery and other circumstances where money is being made by our labor for others. The modern death penalty, 80% black, lynching indoors. The police, as the army of occupation, have taken lynching outside again. The lynch mob, the racist system, including the courts and the media, because the lives of our heroes and sheroes who once protected us in our community do not matter to us, the people. Repeat that. Because the lives of our heroes and sheroes who once protected us, our community, do not matter to us, the people. Our political prisoners are now dying in captivity. They are tortured and isolated. Only armed struggle can recreate our image in our own minds as well as the minds of others. Speak up. Now is the time. Now, I was going to make a quick comment before I allow others to jump in on that. I'm going to go to the president's speech when he said, the problem is guns. And it is lots because guns are what brought us into this situation out of Africa. And guns killed the Indians and cleared this land for the white settler nation to come here. It was guns that separated this white settler nation from their masters in Europe. It was guns that kept us in our subservient condition in the South because there were more slaves than white people, so every family had to be armed. It was guns that fought the Civil War. And when the war was over, in the armistice, in the treaty, the white soldiers were allowed to take their guns home, and so that was from Appomattox, and the soldiers in the field, they had some formula, five of seven could take their guns. We know what happened. Guns were then forced upon an unarmed community of ex-slaves, and they stayed in slavery right up to 1965, 63, when they said, we must have the right to vote. You understand? Not the right to stand around, not the right to organize. Finally, the right to vote in 1963, and they're still fighting that. And so don't tell me it's about guns. And I say capitalism is a part of it, because if you make something in capitalism, you got to sell it. And they make guns in America, and the only people who can afford American guns are Americans. So let us forget it is guns. It is a part of the American system. And finally, I'll say, who opposes the Russian Revolution? Who opposes the Chinese Revolution? Who opposes the Vietnamese struggle in their own land? Who opposes the Cuban Revolution? Who opposes any revolution? And as Lynn Stewart once said, what is good for the goose is good for the gander, I think, and repeated that. And so here we are in the belly of the beast. And with that said, I'm going to open up the mic to other people talk on these issues, including the young woman who passed for black. And I love it. I tell you, I love it. And it's more than my sense of humor because it makes us see what is possibly real. But I'm going to open up the mic for people to come in.
And I want to say to you, the call-in number is 347-857-3293. Then you have to hit 1 so you can be in the speaker's queue. So I'd like to know if Brother Henry Higgins is here to give us an update on Mamiya.
Yes, I am. Yes, I am, okay. Sister Betty.
Back to Mike, brother.
Yeah. As you pointed out, just quickly, if somebody has the background TV on or something like that, it's interfering with the clear ability to hear what's going on. But anyway, long story short, Mumia is still in grave danger. His skin is not healed. He's not getting the kind of medical attention that he needs to have in order to improve his health. There's an urgent call for people to call the Bureau of Prisons and demand from John Wetzel, the fact, demand from John Wetzel, Secretary of Department of Corrections, the right of Amir to be seen by doctors of his own choice and to have his medical records released. And you can voice your concerns to him or put pressure on John Wetzel at 717-728-4109. Amir is still not out of danger. He's still in grave danger, and we need to keep the pressure on to improve his medical condition and also to continue to struggle to free Mumia. As we all know, Mumia was framed for his political beliefs, and they've made efforts ever since 1981 to silence him in one way or the other. And we have to keep the pressure on. We cannot afford to lose someone as valuable as Mumia is for all number of reasons. The other thing is I would like to quickly mention to folks is that this coming July 3rd, there will be a demonstration in Philly in support of Mumia and MOVE at City Hall Park about 12 noon. You can call the Mumia hotline at 212-330-8029 for more information. Also, we want to call people's attention to the fact that this coming July 25th in Newark, New Jersey, People's Organization for Progress is having a million persons march to denounce police brutality throughout the country. These assaults on us must be stopped, they must be denounced, and we must organize ourselves to protect ourselves. It is obvious that a campaign of death and intimidation is being unleashed on us in great numbers and all throughout the country. And so we must keep the struggle going. We must support the Million Persons March in Newark, New Jersey this coming July 25th to keep the pressure on. And you may contact POP at 973-801-0001 or email them at info@pop.org. Future demonstrations will be taking place around the NAACP convention in Philadelphia on July 11th. And also, there's going to be an organizing effort to put pressure onto the Pennsylvania state legislators to free Mumia. Again, the pressure to free Mumia and improve his medical condition must continue.
Thank you, Brother Higgins. We appreciate that update. I want to remind all participants in this broadcast, try to keep your background noise to a minimum. We try to keep an open mic so you can chime in. Secondly, in order to be heard, you must hit 1 after you dial in. Is Jericho in the house?
Yes,
Jericho,
I am.
Jericho, thank you, Sister Ann Lamb. Give us an update on our political prisoner struggle.
Okay, well, I just received an update, a health update from Russell Maroon Schultz. You know, he had he has prostate cancer, and he's been having radiation treatments. So he writes a little update about that I just received today. He said, my primary report is that I have continued with the radiation therapy at the same cancer center for the entire month of April and into the first day of May 2015. Furthermore, there is movement on another major health concern regarding my right eye. In addition to weathering common symptoms of a treatment, the fatigue is an entirely different matter. While both my oncologist and physician's assistant or nurse practitioner have weekly examined me after the sessions and offered advice on what foods to eat, which I've earnestly integrated into my treatment, in addition to what I've read, as well as my previous acquired knowledge concerning nutrition, the fatigue is still constant. I often feel like I cannot do much more than drag myself out of bed, and I have been sleeping more now than at any time as far back as I can remember. Still, I exercise 20 minutes or so and do some walking daily. That helps some, but otherwise my reading, writing, typing, and even socializing are at a very low level. According to the literature, my strength will gradually return after I am cured of the cancer, if that is to be. On May 1st, after the last treatment, I was taken directly to the office of the ophthalmologist, who last year had recommended I have cataract surgery on my right eye, whereupon the chief healthcare administrator at Greaterford had lied about me refusing this treatment. He examined me again and once more is recommending said surgery for my eye, so stay tuned. Let me again thank all who continue to extend support to my family and me, and let me assure everyone that it is not lost on me that my situation and person is a small matter in these heady times, times and events that are truly historic in regards to how countless thousands are standing up to oppression in ways that even have the potential to make the celebrated 1960s seem little more than a dress rehearsal in order to save ourselves from the maniacs who are bent on destroying our very planet. Straight ahead, Maroon. That's one. And then his daughter wrote a beautiful piece, My Father's Day with Maroon, by Sharon Schultz. It's very short. She says, while driving on the New Jersey Turnpike en route to visit my father, my thoughts wandering endlessly about the tasks and responsibilities one is charged with on any given day, I began to sing along with the song A Family Reunion by the OJs that was playing on the radio. As the song came to the lyrics referencing a family being the solution to the world's problems and then poignantly describing each member's role in the family, I realized I couldn't recall ever seeing, touching, or even speaking the words Happy Father's Day to my dad on the actual holiday. Having turned 50 years young this month, I can finally say that on Sunday, June 21st, 2015, I spent a wonderful Father's Day with my dad, Russell Maroon Schultz, my brother, Russell III, Dr. Kim Holder, and my namesake aunt and minister, Sharon Joy Schultz Mayazi. I would like to devote this experience revelation to all my fellow Cubs who have experienced similar or very different revelations about their parents, be it their mother or father. I invite others to share and post their experiences and revelations as they relate to being the sibling, wife, husband, mother, father, daughter, or son of an activist. I'm sure we all have so much to reveal and so much to give. In my Don Cornelius voice, the mighty, mighty OJs, you know the family is the solution to the world's problems today. Now let's take a look at the family. In the family, the father is like the head, the leader, the director, not domineering, but showing love, guidance for everyone else in the family. Now if we could get all the fathers of the world to stand up and be fathers, that would be great. So that was from Sharon Schultz and she and her dad.
Ma'am. And I know we can rely on you each Tuesday to give us an update on one or two political prisoners. I want the caller for the last four digits, 5053. Is that you, Ann?
I think I was 5263. I have to go look it back up again.
Okay, all right. Well,
whatever number you had texted to me was the number. I can look it up
okay.
Now. Okay,
5053. Get ready. Right now I'm going to take my back to Mr. Pointer.
Yes. Two things I would like to comment on very briefly. Does anyone doubt when I say, let us be correct when we say death camps are where our political prisoners are being held and they are being killed in the back door by lack of medical treatment?
Absolutely.
I've been saying it for years. Let's get it straight. They're in death camps.
Yes, they are.
And as to the announcement of the NACP, I remember, I believe it was last year, being out in California with Reverend Pinckney demonstrating against the NAACP meeting, their convention. And this was before it became known that they were selling the support of the people through the NAACP to anybody who paid the price. Witness the owner of the Warriors, racist, even the great basketball player who was one of the richest guys going was considered less than somebody human. And so Magic Johnson is considered a nobody by this clown. And the NAACP was giving him an award. And Reverend Pinckney and I were out front of the Coliseum speaking out against the NAACP. And I hope that there are people on here who were members of the NAACP when Hazel Dukes threw out some of the members, Sundiata Sadiq of the Austining NAACP.
That's
and
right.
So many people quit the NAACP, and we suffered through all of the leaders of the NAACP, and now this woman comes up. And to me, give her Hazel Dukes, the last leader that was chased out of the NAACP, or the young woman who was being black, the white woman. I choose the young white woman who was being black. But let's have other people come in on that.
Well, again, her deeds speak for how she really felt about, you know, struggling on behalf of the oppressed people. And I think rather than her being criticized, she should be, in effect, praised for her effort, you know. And so that she wanted to identify with the oppressed people, in this case, people of African descent here in the United States, well, then, you know, so much the better.
Well, you know what I said last week. We had a long discussion about this last week, Ralph. This is Dick, and I haven't changed my point of view that, you know, we should be encouraging people who are white to be thinking like blacks and vice versa, where it's good and just. Unfortunately, she was in a town where, you know, she didn't know better than to know that the NAACP is not the way you fight racism, but rather, on the contrary, the NAACP participates with the, you know, the government's, let us say the government, our politicians' efforts to minimize the fact that everything, you know, all this, like in South Carolina, becomes racism. Because if the NAACP does that by joining them in this ridiculous call for gun control. We all knew that it was coming the moment we heard of the story. People get caught and, the, you know, certain people start crying, certain liberals and all start crying for, oh, let us end gun control. That is not the cause. And, you know, we have to get to the cause. And what is the cause? Well, as you can tell, you know, and, I wrote a whole book on the subject of human nature, and human nature is the only conceivable cause. We have, it is what people think, and we're not going to solve any of our social problems if we don't understand the real differences between people. And the science of modern psychology and the science of astrology and any other side, geology, genetics and everything, none of them have explained human nature adequately. We all know that from just what they say. So let's remember that when we look for the cause, we're not going to say it's guns. We're not going to say anything like that. As a matter of fact, knowing we'd be talking about this today from your notice, Ralph, I went and looked up my list of famous Jefferson quotations that I kept for many years in order to get his view on it, because his view is exactly like mine. Besides saying no free man shall ever be debarred the use of arms, you're free, you have the use of arms. If you're not free, you're a prisoner. He said, the strongest reason, in reply to all those people who say, well, we must let people have arms because they like to hunt and shoot and target shoot. It has nothing to do with hunting and target shooting. This is the reason, as Thomas Jefferson said, quote, the strongest reason for the people to retain the right to keep and bear arms is, as a last resort, to protect themselves against tyranny in government. And if we are not an armed public, then we are not a public that can resist the destruction of our democracy and the end of all those fine words that Jefferson put in the Declaration of Independence. Basically, that all people are created equal and that they have inalienable rights. Well, how do they have inalienable rights if not every one of them has the same basic rights? And so that makes the struggle one of individualism or leftism, as I said. That was a good quotation. And for Mr. Vajol there, remember last week's conversation, I saw in that same page another quotation that pertains to why we should vote down the TPP and the people who are running that. That's the trade bill that's now going through the Senate and probably will go through the House shortly. He said this when he was president in 1802. Quote, I believe that banking institutions are more dangerous to our liberties than standing armies. If the American people ever allowed private banks to control the issue of their currency, first by inflation, then by deflation, the banks and corporations that will grow up around the banks will deprive the people of all property until their children wake up homeless on the very continent their fathers conquered.
So thank you so much. Okay. I'll reserve turn for now. And later have a discussion about capitalism. I'll add a few comments about that too.
Yes, and anybody who doesn't understand the 15 million foreclosures and still going, which the media doesn't talk about, how is it connected? But I see, I think Joel is on. Joel, would you like to give us an opinion on what's happening
hello?
And our statements?
Yes, hello?
Hello, Joel,
yeah,
I hear you loud.
Hi, can you hear me?
Loud and clear.
Oh, okay.
Loud and clear.
Yes, I wanted to, I know a lot of the program was about what happened, the massacre in South Carolina, and just recently this comment about the people that are pushing through this Pacific Trade Partnership, which is a form of imperialist enslavement. And there's a link, I think, between all of those people, and that's this, that, you know, we're talking about capitalism in the abstract, even racism to some degree in the abstract, but many of the events and attacks that have taken place in recent years are done in the name of some lone nut assassin. And very often when you open the hood and you look at what's in that car, what's driving it, it turns out that you have various FBI agents, CIA agents that created plots and so on, and manipulated certain people along certain lines for their own benefit. And I think that we would be remiss if we allow this thing, this massacre to go down without investigating who really might have been manipulating this, which has become an event different from many of the other things that have happened. Like, for example, in the beginning of the show, there was some talk about the massacre in Tulsa, Oklahoma. But that was openly joined by the United States government and also involved a major mob of racists in Tulsa that attacked the black community under the protection of U.S. government air cover. Whereas recently, I think the freelance racist violence has somewhat become replaced by official violence, for example, police brutality. Like, this guy differs from many of the racist murderers, and that, as far as we know, he is not actually a cop. But was he manipulated by the government? I think that there's a whole history. People like Sirhan, for example, who never actually shot anyone, but was apparently manipulated into playing a role in which he could be arrested as a scapegoat. And the son of Sam, he had a military connection. He was involved in psychological experiments in the military after he condemned the Vietnam War that he was in the middle of and refused to go out on missions. The obvious psychological experiments there, which he accepted in order to avoid a court-martial, was they wanted to see if they could make a killer out of him. And apparently that is what happened. And there are a lot of the, this might sound a little bit crazy to some people, but I'm even suspicious that the AME church was selected as the site of the massacre because the reverend, the pastor of that church, his name is the same as Reverend Pinckney's name. And that means it's going to, from now on, it's to say Free Reverend Pinckney, people are going to think, oh, the pastor in South Carolina that was killed by the racist, rather than the, so that it creates a certain distraction. Maybe that sounds a little bit not only to many people, but I just don't put anything diabolical beyond this government, either especially morally, but also technologically, using different mind control techniques. And I also want to say that the lesson, the real lesson is that we need guns for self-defense against racists like this Dylan Roof character, but also in general against government tyranny, of which he may have been a manipulated arm, or whether he was or he wasn't. The government is becoming more and more tyrannical all the time. They arrested a 5-year-old a few months ago because he, with his hand, simulated a gun and said, bang, bang. And they arrested the 5-year-old and charged him with a terrorist threat. For what, really? Because they're trying to disarm us, not only even of having any physical weapons, but even the thought that we're supposed to condemn, even the thought of self-defense, especially against the growing forces of tyranny and fascism. So
I cut into you at that point, Joel. That is very well said. But it is very important to know that we cannot do much about what the government manipulations of people are, but what we can do is defend ourselves. That is in our hands. And as you had mentioned, it is our mindset they have controlled. But that, I'm going to go on to 5053 and hear what you have to say about this discussion. 219-5053. Did you come in on that? And I know I do the same thing when I'm on a program and somebody mentions my number. That's a number I never dial, but I don't know what my number is. But I still see you on the screen. So I'm going to on to 7845. 718-7845.
That's me, Henry. From the
Henry.
Let me
go on to the next one. There's so many numbers on the board here, and I'm a little slow. While I'm, as Lynn calls me,
219-5053.
I'm a Luddite at this, and I will soon get it together if I keep practicing on you good people who will listen in. Anyone else have something to say on that? We'll go into the discussion of capitalism, what it means.
Could I make just one comment on the question, a question that Joel raised?
Ralph, there's only 12 minutes left, you know.
All right. I'll make no further comments.
Dick. Go ahead, Dick.
I just wanted to say that according to his manifesto, which, by the way, was a literate document, so the young murderer, was doing a lot of reading. His basic source was the so-called Council of Conservative Citizens, headed by this guy Holt, who made a lot of big contributions to Republican candidates for president, which brings us back to something I said last week. It's the Republicans who are supporting the South, and the most racist states in the nations are governed by Republicans. And by the way, in that connection, there was a recent poll I heard about today that was taken. Republicans voted 3-2, polls 3-1, rather, that the Confederate flag is a symbol of pride, whereas Democrats polled 3-1 that it is a symbol of racism. So now if you want to fight racism, clearly you have to start by getting the people who are most responsible for it, not only in elections, but, you know, in all their arguments and their false arguments. They come first. The others have to be treated. The politicians who pretend to be good people and join the Democratic Party. Remember, the progressives tend to be in the Democratic Party, and the conservatives tend to be in the Republican Party. That explains it right there. Conservatism is not a political ideology. It is a psychological disorder. So that's what happens. All the Republicans are crazy in the sense that if they are conservatives, that, you know, they just aren't facing reality and are looking forward to progress. Sorry.
I'm going to cut into that, but I'm going to jump quickly to Robert Mugabe in Zimbabwe. And when their struggle was going on, they had a motto, none but ourselves. And I say this to people of color, of like mind. Because understand, and I will say this loud and I'll say it clear, and I want everybody to understand it, black people are as racist with black people as white people are, only black people do not have the power to do anything about it. Look at the color difference within the black community. And so when I say our people, I'm talking about people of like minds, people who understand justice for all. And so let us go on. I think Lynn jumped in there for a minute to remind me that we are winding up. We have 10 minutes to go. Capitalism and how it works. Capitalism, would anybody like to come in on that? But understand, all of these issues, as have been mentioned on tonight's program, have to do with money. And when we talk about corporations, et cetera, and I remind people that Reverend Pinckney's archenemy was Whirlpool Corporation, and he had a boycott against Whirlpool Corporation that reduced them to penny stock. Their stock was ridiculous because of the national and international boycott that Reverend Pinckney was leading. And that is what got Reverend Pinckney in trouble. He found the key, and he was pushing the button to stop a corporation. And he also raised the issue of recall for those who pretended to be black and then got in office and then took corporate money, capitalism. And remember, how did this all start? Where are we coming from? And I'm going to start with only in America, because it started before it got to America. But what was America built of? But trading companies. Trading companies were formed to make money. And they used the people in the colonies, the Indians, the land, everybody there, the indigenous people, to make money. The slave trade, to make money. Imperialism, to make money. The subprime loan, a criminal document, to make money. And now people have recognized it, and we call ourselves the 99%. Well, if you understand that, you need not know anymore. That those who have it are taking it all, and when we talk about how does capitalism work, they send young men abroad to sustain, to control, to take over their colonial empires. And when they come back home, wounded, sick, etc., they do not get medical treatment, not proper medical treatment. We're all aware of the Veterans Administration problem, but that's only a small piece of it. Now they talk about give $20 a month or $24 a month to support our wounded warriors. And I say, well, let us ask some of the people who destroyed our economy, who got bonuses of $9 million this year, to give up that $9 million for our wounded warriors. But we do not have a public, we do not have a political entity willing to say that. We had it in World War II, when Roosevelt said excess profits tax. I don't hear anybody talking about excess profits tax about anything. And I guess they called him a communist. That's a pretty good idea, excess profits tax. But the American people have not expressed the will to go after capitalism, and we have been attacked by capitalism on every front. Our jobs are gone, our homes are gone, our education is gone, everything is being privatized. Yet we cannot raise the specter of going after wild, rapacious capitalism. And that therein lies the problem. And they do use racism And if you say, hey, I'm upset about what you're doing with the money or with the banks, and they holler, nigger, nigger. And this young man said, you know, they're taking everything, as someone had pointed out. This is an imagination. And I remember when right after Obama was elected, a young woman said to me, well, Obama's given black people everything. And I asked, just name one thing that he's given black people. And there was no answer, of course, because we have not been given anything. And if you say to the average white person that they are living on imperialism, and this is one of the discussions that Lynn and I have had for 50 years, and I would say to her, I wonder if the American people understood that all of these benefits we have, cars, homes, etc., come from imperialism. The Haitian people, the Dominican people, the African people, you name it. Would they accept it or would they reject it? Lynn's theory is that they would accept it and say, right on. And so we have to understand that, and we have to say, as a people of justice, as a people of like minds, no more. We will not accept that. Anyone else? We're running out of time. Anyone else have anything to say about anything that we have discussed? And we haven't gotten to the, we haven't spent much time with the young lady in NAACP. We discussed around her. In conclusion, I'd say she has more right to be black, have being part of a family with black siblings, having two black children of her own, and remembering that most movements around the world have piggybacked on the movement of black people in America as socially and mentally, economically. They've all piggybacked. So this woman does a little piggybacking, but she puts a little something back, and it is almost, excuse me for laughing, but to see black people get upset about that, yes, the affirmative action, which she got, but it, affirmative action affects less than 1% of black people, and we have to remember affirmative action gave us Clarence Thomas. I'm talking about Clarence Thomas, the judge, the federal judge. And so
I would just like to say, Ralph, this is Henry here. I would just simply like to say that the name Smedley Butler should become a household name. Because he indicated that he was a gangster for capitalism and that his whole career was bent on serving the moneyed interests of the military-industrial complex. And I think he coined the phrase, the flag follows the dollar and the dollar follows the flag, or vice versa. But the lessons of Smedley Butler certainly need to be driven home to our people.
Yes, well, thank you.
Can I make a comment, the last final comment? We are misusing the term capitalism here.
Oh,
it's very confusing. No, don't say, oh, please, stop and listen. And let's listen to what I'm saying. Have I said anything that is unjust or immoral? I mean, I've thought this out very carefully. What I'm trying to say is that there is not now, and nor has there ever been, any government in the world that was totally capitalistic and not partly socialistic too, and vice versa. There isn't a crime that you can charge to capitalism, like exploitation, imperialism, the destruction of neighboring nations and everything else by capitalists, that you can't also charge to socialists. And there's a good reason for this. The reason for it is that when we humans think about political and practical matters, there are two poles to the process. There's the pole of what do we have individually, and there's the pole of what do all other people have. And that
okay.
is socialism versus
next
capitalism.
Week, to be continued
sorry,
next week, because I have much
that's what
to
I wanted to do. I wanted to do.
Continue,
I wanted to give you a new, I wanted to say why the word is wrong. I'm not saying that the sentiment is wrong.
We will
saying continue that the word
saying the word and everything else next week, because we are about out of time. Everybody tune in. I will start off with that. We'll finish off with thanks.
say all the things that I should say. Say them loud, say them clear, for the whole.